and welcome to another episode of Can I Have It in Blue, a podcast about design, technology, products, and everything in between. I am Álvaro Bezerra, a product manager at SubVisual, and together with me I've got Joana Gomes, a designer at SubVisual, João Ferreira, head of product at SubVisual as well, and Filipa, a designer at Falcon Foundation. And we're here today to talk a little bit about product processes, how we apply them, how we manage them on our day-to-day, and what adaptations we make from the most usual product frameworks and exercises to our current need. So, yeah, with that, let's have a discussion about it. And I think the first topic is, well, in your experience, how do you handle the challenges of maintaining processes or creating them on your day-to-day?
Yeah, I guess for me, the main challenge is when we don't have processes, right? So basically, as you know, it's a visual. We work with teams that are in the very beginning of their path. So sometimes the biggest challenge for me, because also I'm a designer, not a product manager, when I work on projects that don't have a product manager or are very small teams that are just in the beginning, it's hard for me to come up with these processes, or at least to make teams understand their importance and the importance of setting them up. But when we have a product manager in our project, things get way easier, right?
Yeah, I would argue that even when we do have product managers, it also depends a bit on the actual project and the context of the project, because as you know, like sometimes we have product managers, but they are not necessarily, in our case, the visual product managers, or they're from another team, they're consulting or something like that, and something might not be exactly matching our processes or our idea of a product process. And I think one of the biggest challenges to set up a process is to actually get validation from all the stakeholders, or in particular, the people who are around the project more actively in the day-to-day. It's a really tricky thing, because if everything is going wrong and you come up with a strong voice on how to do things better, there's a tendency to let things flow and see how it goes, and you get a bit of control of the process. But sometimes it feels that when things start going a bit better or start flowing more naturally, there's a tendency to think, okay, the problem was fixed and now we can do things our way again. I am feeling this a bit more in Web3, particularly in projects, although I'm not in a Web3 project at the moment, but I feel it a bit more, because like, it feels like there's a bit of no real clue on how product processes work. So it's like a bit of a leap of faith, take the reins and do whatever. As soon as you start getting things organized, there's this will of putting their fingerprint on things and have these new ideas, these new exciting ideas. How can we make them come true? I don't know exactly if this is a Web3 problem. I am mostly feeling it on this Web3 panorama, that there's this will of like, just get new things, get flashy things out, and you lose a bit of that boring product process where everything takes time to build. And we get into this marketing process where it's like, what can we ship that we can, you know, draw more attention to us, or that we can marketize as the really cool feature? Might be a bit biased of my last project, but that's the feeling I get in terms of what difficult in today's world to establish a product process and what it causes to the team. I have a question on that, but I'll leave it for later.
But do you think, sorry, just a question related to that, to this, because do you feel like that is mostly connected to the project to be in Web3, or is it because sometimes the teams have more junior people, maybe? Just because I think that when projects are in the beginning, maybe the web being Web3 or Web2 doesn't make that big difference when it comes to the marketing things that you were mentioned, like trying to ship things out so you can show flashy things. Do you feel like it's related to being Web3?
I understand, not necessarily. So the symptoms were there even in other projects before. I don't necessarily connect it to being seniors or juniors. It's mostly that people that we have worked with, a lot of Web3 projects come from technical people that had an idea or a concept they wanted to try out. They don't have necessarily the experience of leading an actual product. So while they are probably very senior in what they do, and they have lots of experience in being a developer or whatever it is, they don't necessarily have the skills or even the experience of working on an actual product process or following an actual product process, even understanding the basics of the research and user discoverability. And they don't know the basics of it, basically because they haven't had the experience before, or if they have, it wasn't clear to them that it was a win to have that. Maybe in their past experience as a developer, I'm saying developer because we're pretty mostly the new leaders that are emerging are developers. And so they might be very senior, but they lack the, it's a bit of both. It's like, they might be very senior in what they do, but this is a new role. So they are juniors in that role. It's not necessarily Web3. I'm bringing Web3 mostly because, well, it's what we worked or I have worked more in the last couple of years. And it feels a bit of that ingenuity and immaturity of starting something new, which is very exciting. It's not necessarily well-defined what they want to do and their vision. A lot of the times, like, I saw this, I want to do this with X instead. So they just have an idea. It might be really cool. But then also there's a bit of pressure. Apparently any cool idea needs to become a project or a big thing. And sometimes they don't have the, they're not looking at it like that. So they have to expand their original vision, which was very short and like maybe it was just a concept. And then they lose track of it and get a bit over their heads on what they're trying to do. So not necessarily Web3, just might be my bias of lately.
Yeah, you know, these but projects. Actually, you remind me of something that may be connected to that. That is one topic that we discussed before. That is the raising mechanism that we have for Web3 projects is way different from Web2. And sometimes I believe that when it comes to Web2, sometimes the projects, I'm not saying that it happens with every project, but sometimes this happens and they are connected to accelerators and to mentors and so on. Maybe that can also justify that a little bit, right? So sometimes Web3 projects are funded by the community and may not have so much people connected to them that are more, that have more knowledge when it comes to these kinds of processes.
One thing that I think could make the difference as well, and I was going to also ask you, João, the same question that Joanna asked about, you know, the projects being Web3 or not, but I don't actually think that a thing necessarily related with Web3. And also, I think that when you fundraise through a conventional way, you have rounds and of investments, you might sometimes feel the need to... Obviously, I'm not saying that this doesn't happen in Web3 projects, because it does, obviously. When you have the expectation and the pressure of a round, and you need to meet certain, you know, requirements, or, you know, to be able to win or to win investments within that round, you might feel the need of shipping things super quickly in order to get that. And also, you are in a such early stage where you haven't reached product market fit yet. So you're trying different approaches, failing and iterating on the way. I think it's part of the process itself, not following a super strict product process, even though it might sound contradicting sometimes, but sometimes they just doing what they need to do in order to survive, secure the next round. They don't survive, right? So the project ends up not being a success because it doesn't raise the money that they need to continue. So it's a bit tricky to balance that, because obviously we want to follow a really good process that we trust and that we think that will lead us to better decisions in the future. But also we need to be mindful that sometimes the process can be super messy and not follow a strict line.
Yeah, I would say, or when I think of the Web3, or why I mentioned Web3, sorry, blindly, right? Give it a second.
Yeah, I think that it's not exclusive to Web3, but Web3 does stand out the fact that when you ignore a product process, eventually you're going to pay for it down the line, either you want it or not. I remember when we were on a Web3 project, you said a lot was the design starts at the smart contract level, as in we do decisions up on the smart contract that, although they are very low level technically, they will impact the user a lot, and it will impact the user experience. And in terms of product management processes, what it means to be on a Web3 project, in essence, is that you have one extra pipeline to manage, as in you have the, you can split it either way you want, but in the end, you have the planning and discovery pipeline. You have the usual delivery pipeline of front end and possibly back end or not. And then you still have to manage the smart contracts pipeline, which is a stack on all on its own with extra precaution like audits and all of that, that in the end will affect your processes and roadmap and everything else. So it's an extra layer to manage.
I will say, however, that so again, not necessarily related to Web3 directly for sure, but it, when I mention Web3 is because of that sense of like sales-led growth instead of product-led growth, as in you are trying to grow the value of your token, the speculation around the token, to generate value on sales, let's say, and instead of actually having a focus on the product market fit, actually, right? So on our experience, I think a lot of projects, you find that challenge of like talking with a stakeholder, with the CEO, whatever it is, and like, okay, but what is this? Who's this for? What the goal here? And it's really hard to get a straight answer, right? To get a very clean answer on what's the vision for this. Ultimately, it's like if you do the five whys exercise, you end up with so people can make money at the third question, right? But it feels like it lacks a bit more of that understanding of this will only be full or relevant, even for me, this will only be a success if I can, in due time, find the market fit for this and improve to stakeholders or to the market that this is a valuable product that helps people in this shape or form. And I think with Web3, you'll feel less the necessity of actually proving you have a product market fit because you can be successful, meaning you can get funding just based on speculation and loan. This also happens in Web2 world, of course, but it's a bit harder because you then will be dealing with actual investors who are professionals and do that for a living. And in Web3, you do this with the common internet user who understands a bit about technology and wants to play around with Web3.
Just a disclaimer that Web3 projects actually also get, you know, just the standard round of investment. So that's not only like the ICOs, but also like...
No, there's always a...
Just a disclaimer.
Private sales. And of course, you can get partnerships with those deals. But as you were saying, like that's the end, like the end goal a lot of the times, even if I'm not saying like it's from the get-go, that's the idea. I'm not saying that. But at some point, as you were saying, the pressure is that I'm only going to give you X if these tokens are worth something at the end of this trade, right? So it feels like it's the much shorter deadline for the success of both parties, right? So if you launch the token is worth more than I paid you for, I can sell my tokens and I clean my hands and it's a great investment. Is this actually worth something to someone before it becomes valuable to all those who play the part in it? But then again, we are obviously deviating a bit from product processes and they're just going into this loophole of Web3.
As in being allowed to do products without the pressure of satisfying investors or commitments that have nothing to do with the value that your product is bringing to the user. I mean, that's the dream, right? And what I feel is that sometimes in Web3 projects, you have that validation. So in the essence, you can focus on doing the products the way it should be and not deviating your roadmap because of investor requirements or just trying to get that product market fit while still even haven't tested fully your initial one.
And actually, I was curious, Alvaro, for you as a product manager, what are the main challenges that you face when it comes to process, both in Web3 and Web2?
That's cool, because I don't think in the processes of creating and managing processes, I don't feel that there's a huge difference just besides the dimension regarding Web2 or Web3, because at least in the product I worked with, the main challenge is maintaining the process, as in defending it, making sure that it's followed properly by everyone involved. Because the thing with processes is that either everyone follows them, or if someone doesn't, then it's completely unfulfilled. You only need someone not following the processes for them to be wrong, right? Or for something to go wrong. As João said, doing products on itself is a skill set, and knowing how to do them is a proficiency on its own. Explaining the why and making everyone that doesn't have contact with making digital products before, why is it better to do it this way, using the established frameworks and taking our time with discovery, asking questions, speaking with users, doing user research. Sometimes it's not clear the benefits of it. Until you actually do it and can show the results of it, it's always hard to get stake or to get people involved in the process. So yeah, that's the biggest challenge for sure, is maintaining the process. Again, business deadlines or feature requests and changes of priorities that have nothing to do with the product, but with the company itself.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question, but I believe that you already answered in part at least. That was, do you have any tips or advices when it comes to making people follow processes? Because I also agree that sometimes it's difficult for us to make people understand why they are important. But as you mentioned, I think one of the tips could be explaining why and showing why. But do you have any other advices?
Yeah. Showing the why and the result means that you had a chance to do it at least once, which is great, but you don't always get the chance to do it. For example, a round of user research. I do advise always finishing them with a presentation to the product owner, all the stakeholders, and you stress out the insights that it gave you for your product decisions. That's always really important. A quick tip is adding clips of the user research if you do the interviews, for example, so that it's not only always the team saying that. Different to have a user say it. So that always causes an impact. Oh yeah, I have one actually from André Albuquerque of 1 month product. He talked about it on one of the courses. He called it the double jab, and it's actually really useful. It's an instinctive reaction that it's good for a product manager to have when you get that infamous request of just saw this awesome cool thing that our product needs to do, from the CEO or the product owner or whatever, right? So what I usually do is always go why, and I go user research mode, because it's much easier to argue with the whys and understand the reason behind it than to automatically say that the feature doesn't make sense just by the name of it. Okay, so I always try to understand the reason behind the request. And then once I do, I always go, okay, that sounds important. Look, I open screen share if it's remote, show the current roadmap or the current pipeline, and I go, okay, so the team is currently working on all of this. What should we move to make space for that new thing? And usually what happens is the following. We start discussing. I start saying the whys of the things that we are working now, and eventually the new request falls down into discovery, or it falls into forgottenness. Because the main reason is that, first of all, you're showing that the team is working at max capacity, which it always should. As in, any deviation from the current plan will have its impact. And second of all, you are not arguing against the product owner. In the end, you are making the product owner argue against himself, because it's his vision or her vision and their requirements for the product. So you're just mediating the roadmap and making him or her question their decision against their own decisions, and not your opinion or you repeating the facts of the past.
Do you consider that a neutral role? As in, okay, I have a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
We worked on this roadmap together, right? So now I'm the guardian of this map, but you can mess with it as long as there's this trade-off. As in, if you put this, we need to figure out what else we can remove. And that you're only, like, that's your concern? Or do you feel you might need to here and then based on user research, if any, defend some point of view in this matter, or just give the facts and hope for a decision and hope that the stakeholder makes the best decision and move forward?
Yeah. In the ideal scenario, of course, as a product manager, I'm also responsible for the entirety of the product, at least the way I see it. So I want everyone to have all the information they need to make accurate decisions and valuable decisions. And a lot of the information comes from the users themselves and doing user research. So what I always try to do in this discussion of what is important and why we are doing this is reinforcing that, not only why are these features or these epics important for the company, but also why they are important for the product and for the users. So that in the end, we are making an informed decision, which is always the goal.
That was a really good example that you've mentioned, Alvaro. And I was curious if you'd have any other processes that you like to follow in terms of developing the product. Mm-hmm. I think that could be, if you could mention a couple of examples, that could be nice for the people that are listening to us to have some examples of processes in practice.
Good question, because my first step in creating any process goes back to Charleston Fence, a heuristic of thought. It goes like, if you're crossing a field and you see a fence in it, don't cross it, as in you don't know what's on the other side, or don't remove the fence because it can very easily be a huge bull on the other end and you don't know it. It's a heuristic of thought. The way I put it in practice is don't remove what it's there without knowing why it's there. As in, sometimes we enter projects that have already started and they might have made some bad decisions in terms of processes, but those decisions were made and there was a reason behind them. So before removing or ignoring what is already there, question why it's there and how you can adapt it. But in the end, don't create unnecessary processes, as in create solutions. So first of all, listen to your team, complaints of your team, namely designers and developers, because that's the best way to ensure that people will actually follow the process. Why? Because it's actually solving a problem that they felt. Product theory, right? I committed the error myself of starting a project and then I was with all my templates and all the PRD, the product requirements documents ready to go, a wave of information that the team doesn't need. So tailor your processes to the team, to the needs of the team, and don't overextend. Be very strict as a product manager of what processes you're creating, because one, a lot of people will have to follow it. Two, someone will have to maintain it. And three, if it's ignored, it will create secondary effects somewhere else. So make sure you're solving your problem when whatever process you're creating.
That's a very good answer. I love that. I think there's a huge parallel between what you've just mentioned and what we are trying to achieve with the product itself, right? Because the product the intention of the product is to solve a problem. It's basically the same thing of just trying to solve a problem and going to the field, talking to people and surrounding yourself with the people that are experienced the problem that you are trying to solve, right? Obviously, we, as people that work in product, know that it is not possible to solve a problem without first understanding it and then just getting as much information as we can from the people that are really experiencing it. So it's quite interesting that it's pretty much the same thing, but obviously related with the product process itself rather than just the product in general, which is really, really interesting.
No, it just made me think of that. For example, on the last project I joined, they were an ongoing team for a while, so things were a bit messy. So the first thing I did as the product manager was to have one-on-ones with mostly everyone on the product team and went like, look, what's wrong? what's stopping you from developing or designing 8 hours a day, rested and with full quality? And that I let the answers and the inputs I got define the processes that we needed, first and foremost. Cleaning up Jira, understanding how to allocate cards, what granularity of tasks we were looking for, and yeah, a lot of information. So funnily enough, yeah, it was basically doing user research for my processes.
Yeah, and just leaving the position of a product specialist to become a team member, right? So you are within a team and you want that team to succeed. So, you know, just being in the position of a product specialist can make you quite distant from the rest of the people that you're trying to solve, which is pretty much the same thing that Don Norman mentions when he says that people should leave the position of design specialists and stop designing on their own and for themselves and just allow a sort of like cooperation within design. Yeah, it's really interesting that it kind of overlaps.
Indeed.
So in asking Joana and Filipe, as designers, how do you see the design role in this product process? You've had differences in different projects, but how do you see the role and how you feel it's the best way of using your skill set or this challenge of setting this up and allowing this to progress?
To think a little bit. Actually, when it comes to this, Albert was talking, I was thinking that it's really important to have a product manager in a project, because as a designer, I struggled before, not because I don't have the skills. Sometimes we are obliged to kind of work as well on the processes, but because I don't have the skills that a product manager has, and I also have to focus on my own work that is most related to design and not to this. So sometimes I struggled with that in the past. Just wanted to highlight that having a product manager is essential if you want to have a successful project, someone that is fully committed to make this happen, to make sure that the processes are being followed. And your question was, Ron, how can we as designers?
So how do you see the role of a designer in this? How would we support? How do you see the support a designer might give on their role and setting up the processes? Yes. And where do you fit in?
Yeah, so I think we can be great tools when it comes to this, in the sense that, for instance, we understand the importance of following these kinds of processes. Mainly, I'm thinking mainly, for instance, user research, having all these questions about the why ask and answer. So I think we can really have a role of supporting the product manager when it comes to this. Like I said, because we understand the importance of it, and also because we have our own processes. So yeah, I think we can be a great tool for product managers.
And also we are, so our work is part of the process itself, right? So we work to firstly maintain the process, and we are contributing to it as well. So a part of, like, obviously we understand the importance of following certain steps to reach a specific goal, but then, like, in order to reach that goal, we also need to do those steps. So I think it could be, I don't know if it kind of aligns with your question, Joana, because I think there's a huge overlap between the product process and the design process, because sometimes we cannot distinguish between those two, design in a way, and there is no design without product.
Yeah, mostly in the more earlier stage, right? Because when the product is more stable, or when you are in a different phase, when you are creating UI, you can be more independent, right? But I believe that our roles are very connected in the earlier phases, when we try to understand the why, when we are making the user flows, even when we are aligning the team on wireframes and so on. So I believe that this comes, a lot of the insights that we have to be able to work on these types of things come from the work that we do with the product manager and the work that we do in the proper processes.
Yeah, and also, like, even afterwards, even when we are only focusing on the UI elements and some more visual stuff, it obviously it's different, but in some way, as it's going to also affect the look and feel, it's affecting the product ultimately. So it's not as similar, and sometimes it doesn't overlap as much. But for me, as it's affecting the product in any way, it's a bit dependent, which is the interesting thing, because obviously for me, it's a bit also, it comes back to the famous question between the difference between the UI and UX roles. And so what's a UX designer, what's a UI designer, and what's a product designer? And sometimes that answer is quite tricky because it can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But what I like about this more broad term of product designer is that it kind of, you know, groups everything, and it takes the product as a living system that needs a lot of different pieces to continue living. And we're just having a more broader view of it.
And what do you think about this intersection of role, our role as designers in supporting this process?
Yeah. When I was listening to Flip and trying to think what I wanted to say about this, because this would be like a whole other topic. And we've talked about these things a few times between ourselves. But what I was trying to think of was how to describe a designer, and then the universe is around it. So it's like a designer, a person that within the context of a product, so a product designer, is someone that should have the product in mind, right? So that means the product is trying to solve something for someone. The designer should be very, very knowledgeable about who those personas, let's use that expression, are, what are they doing this for, what are the jobs to be done, they're trying to do, et cetera, et cetera. And that goes, when we say UI, UX designer, for me, this is, it doesn't say anything about the person because they can be really, really great, but the sense that this is a UI designer means this is a designer that is really good on user interface design. So for me, there's no good UI designer without them being really good UX designers. I don't understand how the separation. I can understand that you might be really a good UX designer without having UI skills. I understand, but then it's going to be like either you're working in a big corporation or a big team that can have you just doing UX work purely, and someone else handles the UI and there's very compartmentalized work or something like that. But it's weird for me to have like a UX designer doesn't know anything about UI or doesn't have the basic skill set of UI. So in the context of the product, and maybe biased with our experience at Savvisual, because usually we work with small teams where either one or two designers working on a project, I feel like if we are not what we were saying, as we were calling product designers, we need to be very knowledgeable on top of everything and kind of be the sidekick to the product manager, whoever that is or whoever is doing that role at that moment. And sometimes when there's no product manager, it can rely on the designer in our case to do that role. But sometimes we need a more technical person, and then our job goes back to being the support for that person on the why of things, on why are we doing this or what the job to be done behind this. I feel like we as designers are almost like the replacement for the product manager when the product manager is lacking in some, and you can't really cover everything as a designer, as you were saying, Joanna, because you have your own responsibilities. But many times when there's a gap, I feel like it's more natural for the designer to step up and take that responsibility. I think in our experience, this feels true.
I think for us, for me, I agree with you. And for me, it's also a little bit weird, but I believe that this comes from our experience, as you said, because when it comes to bigger companies, I don't think that it's usual for the role to be just UI designer and UX designer, because you have a bunch of people working, and you have, for instance, for a UI designer, you don't have to have so much expertise when it comes to UX, because that work is done by someone else. So you just need to apply it to your work because you have all these insights. But as you said, for us, it's way different in smaller companies.
In the end, and especially in small team, it's all about redundancy, right? So the big three, as in the product team, the product designers and developers, in the end, trying to back each other out, to support each other, and creating these redundancies and compounding on knowledge. which affect the product. I always try to see the reflection of our processes in the product that we are building, because in the end, it doesn't lie. So, well, thank you all for joining. It was really cool. We talked a little bit in different topics, Web 2, Web 3, having a PM, good or not, definitely good, expertise and all of that. But in the end, processes is what we cover. Thank you all and see you later.
Bye-bye.
Everyone.